We return to the animated trilogy of sci-fi Netflix Godzilla films this week with the middle entry. But does this film benefit from being the dark middle chapter of the three? Or is it just a dark stain on the series as a whole? Come along with us to a mechanical city that not once transforms into a kaiju as we explore the ruins of this film. This is Kaiju vs. History. Godzilla, City on the Edge of Battle. Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your self-sacrificing alien race, Patrick. And joining me is a human who wants to rage against the machine, Miles. Hey, Miles.
What's up, buddy?
More of this series.
Yeah.
It's certainly, but wait, there's more,
but that's more of a threat than a invitation. Yeah, this came out in 2018, as we mentioned, and it's so interesting because I remember being so excited for all three of these. And I don't know if it was Stockholm syndrome or what, but I was just like, every single one I watched the day it came out. And yeah, this is such an interesting, I think, series in some ways of more of like a how did this get made sort of situation. And because, I mean, it's the same group.
We're doing a podcast about how it got made.
Yeah, but we don't like deep dive. Like at this point, once the first one's out, they're making all three, you know?
Well, so yeah, they were planned together. And that's like kind of a bad thing in this case because there was no course correcting. Like they already, you know, laid in basically what they were doing for all three of them. Unless you really like the first movie, you will probably love this one. Cause I do think this is, you know, spoiler warning for my review, maybe just a little bit better than the first film in some ways.
Oh, interesting. You went in an opposite direction.
I enjoyed this more than the first film, even though there were some rug pulling for the audience, I think, which is hilarious, but we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that. But before we do, Patrick, tell us, what's in a title?
This is a great title, right? Like it's very English, City on the Edge of Battle, but it's metal, you know? Like
it certainly does have that feel. No, it does have like an 80s like metal or dark fantasy feel. It definitely has kind of a, or even it's like a synthwavy kind of vibe.
Yeah.
I don't dislike this title at all. I wish it fit a better movie, but continue.
I wish this title well in its endeavors. Mm-hmm. The original title in Japan is Gojira, Kessen Kido, Zoshiko, Toshi, Godzilla, The Fate of the City. It translated out slightly different in different languages. In Germany, the subtitle was City on the Brink of Battle, so very close to Edge of Battle, Brink of Battle. There's another Japanese title kind of translation that came out to Godzilla, Battle Mobile Propagation City, or Proliferation City. Like there's different, you know, I guess that speaks to the nature of Mechagodzilla City in that it's like self-replicating.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in a lot of places, this was just like Godzilla animated film part two or chapter two. And yes, the Chinese title in Taiwan was Godzilla Decisive Battle in the Mobile Proliferation City. I think I enjoyed that one. But yeah, this is one of the rare instances where like the regular English title is maybe the best. City on the Edge of Battle. Good stuff, right? And this movie is very much a direct sequel in that it starts immediately where the last one left off. And I'm just guessing because I still haven't watched it, but I'm guessing the third movie starts right where the second one leaves with a character death and spoiler warning, Godzilla's still being a jerk. Godzilla Earth still a jerk.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the end of the first movie, they had taken care of one of the little Godzillas and mostly got all their stuff that they landed on the planet Earth with destroyed. And we saw in a post-credit sequence, our main character had met up with Haru, had met up with a native of Earth who looks, you know, very different from I guess normal Earthlings. And we get to meet those characters in this movie. The Hatoa, is that what their name is? The kind of like the native inhabitants of Earth that have been here for like the last 20,000 years.
Yeah. Something like the Hatoa. They're native people, but like they spend time to tell you that they are, to quote a dated Disney TV movie franchise, not quite human.
Yes. And they don't explain that too much. They talk about how
they're not derived from mammals, and they are basically like as if humanity evolved naturally from the cells of Godzilla in some fashion.
It's supposed to be Godzilla because they talk about how like the powder on them maybe is related to Mothra or their god.
So their god is Mothra. It's confusing, and it's like you said, it's not really well defined at all. Like they give you a couple of like kind of like expositional jargon moments.
What's the dang old Wikipedia say about it?
I didn't have the Wikipedia open.
or what does the Wikizilla say?
But so they do discover these indigenous people, and this basically ends as in the same spot as the post-credit sequence of the first movie, with our boy waking up in this kind of human-like residence, and he's very confused because, you know, there's not supposed to be anyone on the planet.
Well, top side is like inhospitable to, you know, like there's not enough oxygen, or there's too much oxygen, and there's one of those problems where they have to go around breathing. But yeah, they are underground when he wakes up.
And yeah, so we have Arbora Hiro kind of trying to find her at first, and then, you know, finally gets a signal and is starting to like make his way back to where he thinks, you know, any part of his team might be. And he knows that this indigenous girl is following him. But after a couple attempts to kind of have any sort of conversation, he just, you know, goes off and looks for, you know, his group. And he finds some who are also involved in a skirmish with some of these indigenous folks. At first thinking it's only one person because they're very, very fast. And I don't know. Like, I struggle to kind of care at all about some of this stuff. Like, it is. I mean, because, I mean, we were already really middling about the last one. And so this picks right back up. We have the surviving members of the assault from the real Godzilla. And so some of them are kind of strewn about, like they don't know who survived, who didn't. Some of them want to get back to the mothership in the atmosphere, or right above orbit, rather. And I don't know. It's just there's a lot of humdrum, and most of this shouldn't feel humdrum. Like they eventually are, quote unquote, like, you know, taken prisoner, but more or less just encouraged violently to come with them. And they discover that there are more members of their platoon in the underground where these indigenous people live.
Yep. And they are guarding Mothra's egg down there. I think it is confirmed that while they never say Mothra, that is the god that is helping them with like their psychic communication. And obviously the two Mayana characters, the twins, are inspired by the Shobijin from Mothra, the film, and many Mothra films, the two little cuties. Is that what they called them, Miles? What were their names? Little.
What are you like in this?
No, in the original Mothra.
Oh, I am so sorry. I thought you were talking about I thought we had a whole conversation of like what the Shobijin?
Yes.
The Shobijin?
The Shobijin.
Are you talking about the peanuts?
Yes, the peanuts. I thought there was another word for them in the movie as well, but
yeah, I think the Shobujin are the twin fairies or the little beauties or whatever.
Little beauties, yeah, I think that's it. Little cuties.
Well, I didn't know what you were looking for.
I know, I was just trying to come up with the word. So I like that reference, and boy howdy, I was excited. I was like, oh man, Mothra's. Miles, can you spoil it? Does Mothra show up in the third movie?
I mean, as far as I remember, to a degree, there's a Mothra. If I recall correctly, not to any satisfying.
The answer is no, then. Yeah, it's the same thing with our other.
No, keep in mind, it's been, you know, quite some time.
Yeah. The gosh darn city on the edge of battle is our other quote unquote kaiju in this film, and I was waiting for it to transform into Mechagodzilla this entire movie, Miles, and it does less than that. It just stays a city the entire time.
So I think the Mechagodzilla component of this movie is actively bad. Mm-hmm. So you get these three, they discover Mechagodzilla City, which was they kind of figure that the metal in the indigenous people's arrows is related to what they were making Mechagodzilla out of. And it has become a living metal. Mm-hmm. And that in the 20,000 years that have passed since they left, this metal has self-replicated and kind of become its own resource. And also molded itself based off of the city in which
Mechagodzilla was
born. Yes.
Made. Yeah. Yeah. For some
which
reason.
Which is, I mean, it's that kind of almost like Heavy Metal Magazine sort of idea that like on paper is cool. And then the more they talk about it, the more I'm like, what?
the entire thing would have been totally worth it if Mechagodzilla had showed up in this movie in any form. I would have taken a flashback Mechagodzilla. Well, and so
they make a point about how like this metal can kind of like take on the form of things. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, like, this is the first time I watched it. I mean, when I watched it for the first time, that they were going to go take this metal and bring it to the skeleton of the other Godzilla.
Oh man. That would have also been cool to have like a Kiryu in this universe. No, right. Miles, you don't get that.
No, this is the most boring possible way is to make a triptych of badly designed like attack vehicles that they call vultures, I think.
Yes, and I'm angry about the vultures as well, Miles, because that is the Vulture Exo Armors. Such a missed opportunity. Why didn't they call them the giant condor mechs? They had the chance. It was right there. But no. The vultures, I mean, fine mech designs. It seems like they're mostly there to kind of distract and lead Godzilla in. And they're on such a small scale. They're like gnats, you know, compared to Godzilla Earth in this movie. And it's like, okay, that's fine, but it's just like the flying motorcycles that they had in the first movie. You know, it's basically doing the same thing. It looks like they have a lot more armaments, but it doesn't seem to do anything to Godzilla. So it's like, well, what's the point? I will say about Mechagodzilla City, IMDb reports here that supposedly the writer for the film and the director, Hiroyuki Shishita, were fans of the Godzilla series. I think one of the other directors was not. And part of the planning, they were thinking about having Mechagodzilla City come alive in the film's climax, turn into a 1 kilometer tall robot version of itself. And then another version where just like maybe all the buildings turn into Mechagodzilla heads and attack. And then the co-director that didn't like Godzilla movies, Koben Shizuno, turned down that idea. And yeah, so not only do we not get Mechagodzilla in like a flashback, but yeah, we don't get it in this movie as well. Oh, I'm so angry, Miles.
I know.
So frustrated. And it's also a little bit of false advertising because there is, in the poster for the movie, like a Mechagodzilla form You know, there's like two red eyes in, you know, it's very loosely put together in this poster, because obviously I don't even think they had designs for it. So they're like, we need to sell this movie somewhat in the poster. So they made a kind of faux version of it, which is in the film Zero, to hype people up. Yeah. Talking about it is depressing me a little bit.
I mean, everything about this movie is just subpar. I think all of the kind of grunt marine drama is extremely superficial and boring. Like, you have this idea that, like, oh no, you got to, you know, basically mechanize yourself and basically give your way to this kind of like religion of Mecha Godzilla that suddenly appears with this one guy.
Yeah,
and he's Haro, you're not gonna let me down. You're a real man, aren't you? Kind of situation, and I'm just like, this is stupid.
The rough and gruff alien race, the Bela Saluda, are, man, all the aliens really remind me of like Japanese fantasy ancestries. You know, like the it really
is
feels
it more
like,
than one alien race, or is it two factions of the same race?
No, they're from different planets completely. The more elven ones are, you know, like the spiritual ones, and the Bela Saluda are the like warrior, like the Spocks. They're like, oh, it's only logical that we give ourselves over to Mega Godzilla City, because then we'll be able to fight Godzilla. And yeah, they kind of turn into a villain in this movie, because they're, you know, willing to risk everyone's life and not just their own in taking out Godzilla at the end. One thing I do like about this movie is we kind of get a version of burning Godzilla with Godzilla Earth in this. Like, once they harpoon Godzilla Earth after they've sprung their Mecha Godzilla City trap and really light him up, he kind of like shuts down and then starts heating up like millions of degrees.
Yeah, we get that little kind of burning Godzilla vibe.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Doesn't last very long. You know what been very cool in this kaiju movie, Miles? A kaiju battle.
Anything.
Any like, kaiju battle would have been great.
Godzilla walks. That's what Godzilla does in this. Godzilla walks.
He shoots his beam a few times. It doesn't.
Almost seems like it's more like, all right, I'm going to shut up and play the hits.
All right,
it's so lapsadaisical. I just I really dislike the personality that they give this Godzilla, which is basically a lack of personality. It is a big, dumb, lumbering monster.
It's probably the most force of nature any Godzilla has ever been. It is
in the absolute worst way.
Yeah, it doesn't seem angry. It doesn't seem, you know, like it's for a vendetta. It just is seemingly responding to the stimulus of this other creature, kind of Mechagodzilla City, and like moving to destroy it. I don't know, maybe a little bit more animal than character, but I do like all the bits of them springing the trap on Godzilla Earth in this film, and, you know, all the things that go wrong, and like, there's some genuine kind of tension there. But then everything just goes wrong, and once again they fail to kill the real Godzilla at the end of this movie. Spoilers. There's a third film. Spoilers. We've called this a trilogy like 18 times.
Well, like there's a lot of stuff that like when it happens, you're just like, please don't let this be the thing. Like, I remember thinking to myself the first time I watched it, when Mephiles, is that his name?
The kind of
Mephiles whispers to Haro, because he talks about the ancient horror that eradicated his planet. He whispers into it. I already knew what he's going to say. And then
we find
post-credit sequence, you find out his name is King Ghidorah, as they pronounce it here.
Bum, bum.
And I was like, yeah, I kind of figured that. I was kind of hoping it'd be something a little bit different, just to make it a little more interesting. But I figured they couldn't exist. And everything that like happens that I remember from the third movie is not going to surprise you either.
Oh, boy.
It's a struggle for me to get excited even about the idea of another actual kaiju, even though we sell references to some in the first movie, just because of like, it's like, all right, well, we've honestly, this is Godzilla in name only as much as Godzilla 98. Sorry, I'm dropping that hot take.
I wouldn't go that far, but the universe is certainly, I mean, not the least kaiju, but it really, the movie everyone wanted to see was the first 5 minutes of the first film, where there's 50 kaiju destroying Earth. We want to see
you
that.
As far as an anime, yeah, you want to see that. You want to see, well, basically, like, I feel like the team that did Gamera Rebirth kind of saw that. It's like, yeah, we're not doing that.
Oh my God.
Let's give people something they actively want. And something that plays with the history of the character in a way that's interesting. Like this really does kind of just
in
feel
a lot
like,
of new ways, you know. They
yeah,
really...
exactly. This you can kind of feel some of the people that not being connected to the franchise here. And it's really detrimental to, I think, the trilogy as a whole, but specifically this movie. This movie to me is so dry and so boring. And mm-hmm. anytime they have an opportunity to do something kind of interesting, like go into the indigenous people's culture, it's this weird, superficial, like you get a little bit of expositional jargon and then they just move on. And I would have rather spent more time with those twins and what they were about than anything else, because I'm sorry, but like imagine the most boring alien the alien franchise marine grunts and mm-hmm. make a movie about them. That's what we have here, because like even Haro, who's like you're not really even sure what he's about anymore, because like he's all like kind of under the kind of influence of Metfi's in a weird way, like almost as if he was like a, you know, 18-year-old.
Well, he's he's skirting the line between like making sure everyone's, you know, alive, but also trying to kill Godzilla. It does feel a little bit like a rehash of the first film, and that they have this plan to take out Godzilla and all these executables and things go wrong. And eventually, I mean, they technically do kill a Godzilla in the first movie, but you know, not the right one. And this one, it seems like they're going pretty well, but there's a lot of science mumbo jumbo and jargon. And it's like, what is it going to take to kill this Godzilla Earth? Like, we just don't know, because it's so outside the norm of any Godzilla movie, you know?
It reminds me of like kind of being half awake when Sci-Fi Channel would kind of rerun some of the anime films they had, but like not like the Akira and stuff, but mm-hmm. like, you know, Doom Megapolis or, you know, Vampire City or some of these random ones that had like the weird dubs to them that just had like nonsense scripts. Like, this is what like that reminds me of, like being half awake at like 2:30 in the morning and hearing some of these movies playing because I would leave my TV on. And it feels like a conscious version of that. Like, it feels like nonsense to me, and not in a good way. Like, I love good nonsense. I'm a big fan of a lot of it. And if you look at like the movies that I have on my shelf, you're like, yeah, why do you have a 4K of Six String Samurai? But
speaking of which, my Godzilla v. Biollante Criterion just came in.
Yeah, I came in too, and it's awesome. The Eric Powell artwork is very cool. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had a chance to put the disc in yet, but I mean, Criterion usually does really good work with that.
I'm excited. Got a new translation, got a new commentary track on
it. Yeah, and some of the special features look pretty good too that Criterion does. I hope they clearly knew which one they needed to release first, because this is the one that people have really not had access to and have been asking for a proper version for quite some time. So I am glad they let off with this for the Heisei movies. And wish we were talking about that movie instead, but no, we are in the city of the edge of battle.
Yeah,
this movie. I think that's what sucks about this movie is like, even when you're kind of like talking around the plot, like it's just there. Like, I mean, it's like, yeah, this happens and this has, but like, you also feel like I'm watching this series of events. Very little of it's interesting or like emotionally affecting, and I kind of feel nothing by the end of it.
There's very little conflict in this movie, really, until the third act. Like, they do get captured by the, how would, Hatua. But yeah, that gets resolved.
Yeah, I shouldn't have watched quickly. This 2 weeks ago. I should have watched this like closer to recording time.
Yeah, this was the first one I watched. Actually, no, I think I watched the Meg first. Meg is next week. But yeah, there's a little bit of conflict in the beginning, but then there's a pretty long stretch where it doesn't seem like a whole bunch is on the line, except eventually they get to a point where it's like, oh, Godzilla's on our way. We've got half an hour. And it's like, oh, there's about a half hour left in the movie. How fortuitous. But yeah, it's I don't know. Boy, howdy, did folks not really enjoy this. Somehow this has a 60% critics rating on Tomato Meter, on Rotten Tomatoes. But the audience score is 35%. Not a ton of reviews or scores either way. I think more damning for this movie is it really just did not make a splash for kaiju fans or for the general audience or for anime fans. You know, that's a pretty big.
Yeah. You have such a broad, you know, attempted audience. Like, yeah, you've got kaiju fans, Godzilla fans, anime fans, and you managed to disappoint every single one of them.
Yeah. I feel like there's maybe a bit of a better response to the first movie simply because, you know, they kind of tricked people, I guess, with Godzilla Planet of the Monsters. I guess folks kind of knew what they were getting with this second movie. And I mean, honestly, if I was not doing this for a podcast, I might not even wanted to finish this one.
I don't blame you.
But yeah, the first movie had a 75% Rotten Tomatoes score. So we're going down about 15 points on this one, but the audience score for Planet of the Monsters was equally as bad. It was 43%. So both of them just really not connecting with the audience. This did have a theatrical release in Japan. It didn't do great over there, probably for the same reason. I think it cracked like top eight at the time it came out, but yeah, did you have moments of this movie that you did enjoy, Miles, or something that did work for you?
Yeah, the moment when they find the kind of like the Mechagodzilla city or whatever, and the soundtrack finally comes to life, and yeah. it honestly legitimately good, and it gives you like a really cool vibe, and it gives you hope that this movie is going to start being interesting. It's a false hope. But it's that kind of like sense of awe and exploration that first hits when like the city starts coming to life and the kind of synthy score kicks in with the guitar and everything. It's really, really cool. That's probably my favorite scene in the movie.
Well, we can talk about the composer a little bit. Takayuki Hattori did the music for, I think, all three of the films. Double check on that, but he also has done a ton of manga or anime series, the Doraemon series. He did
a actual Godzilla movie,
Godzilla 2000, Godzilla versus Space Godzilla, and yeah, I will say the soundtracks for both these films are pretty good, maybe a little too good. I don't know if that's
possible, the score is certainly the best thing about this entire project.
Well, a lot of folks did have problem with the animation style, and it didn't bother me that much, but it did. I mean, it felt a little dated. I don't know. There are parts that look good, and then some of the character animations, they do have the like PS2 kind of cutscene action going for it. But
reading this correctly, the composer here, let me just double check that I'm
Takayuki
Hattori. He produced the first orchestrated Final Fantasy music CD. So he didn't compose it, but he produced it.
Okay, put it together.
This is pretty cool, actually.
Well, there's something good for it. I think the thing that didn't work for me the most in this movie is the same as the first movie, although we didn't have Godzilla of Earth in the first one. And this is the tallest Godzilla that's ever existed in any form of Godzilla media, to my knowledge, like even comic books. It's just massive on a scale we don't even understand. Maybe too much, because there's like nothing that can give it any sense of scale in this movie. I hope there's something in the next movie, but even when it gets the trap sprung on it, and it's in like that valley that Mechagodzilla City made. Like, that thing has to be the size of the Grand Canyon, you know, in order to trap Godzilla in it. And we just don't have any way to tell. Like, there's no trees that are really tall enough, you know. It just it stinks. And that, because that's spoiler, that's like a big part of the kaiju genre, is getting that sense of scale right. And you would think with an animated film where you could show anything, that would be kind of a priority.
Correct.
Like, put a human next to his toenail at the very least at any point of the film, just be like, oh my goodness, it's huge, you know. But that is not what we got. Let's get to rating this guy. I did enjoy this movie, maybe because it's the first time I'm watching it and I liked it more than the first one, so I'm just giving it 1 point, I think, over what I gave Planet of the Monsters. And I think part of that is because so much of the exposition for the movie and like the time they spent, one, getting back to Earth, and two, like, just looking around Earth, was done in that first film. And this one starts in the middle of things. So, not that it's all action or anything, but this movie, everything that happened did seem to at least drive the plot forward a little faster. But yeah, it's still far from a hit for me. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. It's very good comparatively.
Oh, wow.
Well, I gave 6 out of 10 for the first movie, I'm pretty sure. So it sounds like you're going down, Miles. Down, baby.
Mm-hmm.
What are you giving it?
So for almost the exact same reason, like, you know, the first one, you know, sets everything up. And it's like hearing like this, like, okay, you've got this great opening intro, like, you know, a minute of Overture of a Song, like the first like 45 seconds of AC/DC's Thunderstruck, where you have like the,
I will say,
the guitar build up.
That's probably going to be my favorite part of the entire series. So maybe it's 5 minutes.
And then that's the first movie. And you're like, okay, cool. Like, so now we get like, oh, we're getting some cool stuff in the second one. So it's like having this big buildup of you're writing for the crashing guitar. You're writing for everything. And it's just a big wet fart. I thought this movie was absurdly boring. It was half the time you're checking out because you're just hearing nonsense jargon. You're hearing like just overacted and poorly written like scenes from characters that you don't really care about. And frankly, often don't remember their names except for Haro, because everyone just yells that word every 5 minutes.
Oh, they do.
I think this, as we haven't watched part three yet, and I do not remember how I felt about it now. This might be my least favorite Godzilla movie.
Oh boy. What's your enjoyment?
So for my personal enjoyment is a 5.
Okay. So yeah, we're both.
It is baseline tolerable, but like only because like it's technically well done and like it's got a couple of interesting sequences. Like if I were forced to watch this or something, I'm not going to want to kill myself like I would like Queen Kong or the Naked Monster. But like I'm still not having a good time. And I know I've argued endlessly for the last few years that like, oh yeah, 5 is baseline good. And this is the bad side of baseline good. I'm not going to go 4. I don't think it's like quite there. It's on the low side of 5 for me. But like I do not enjoy this movie. And I frankly, unless I'm forced to again, I'm probably never going to watch it again.
Yeah. So I, like I said, I think just because I enjoyed it a little bit more than the first film, we were both at a 6 out of 10 for personal enjoyment last movie, Planet of the Monsters. So that makes sense. What about for its technical score? Where are you feeling on that?
The script's absolute dog crap. Like as for a technical score, it's messy. It misses every opportunity to do something interesting. The design of the Mechagodzilla is a travesty, and you don't have to make it look like a classic Mechagodzilla or even Kiryu, but like make it look interesting. If you're calling something Mechagodzilla, all right, make it look like Mechagodzilla. Like I'm not the biggest fan of the MonsterVerse version of Mechagodzilla, spoiler warning for a while from now, but like it's still an attempt to look like a Mechagodzilla of the MonsterVerse. That's fine. This is nothing. And I will say the score, absolutely awesome. Voice acting is, you know, I can't blame them for what's written down. So, like, I mean, it's competent enough, but it's not great. So I'm at a five.
Another no, five.
I'm at a six because the animation is not bad at all.
Yeah, I kind of like the animation. I feel like the scripting was maybe a little better on this film, but dialogue was kind of unchanged. Although the development of the plot was a little uneven. I feel like that was a problem with the first movie as well. I do like we get kind of a villain in this, in the Bill Esolado, but I wish their villainous turn was a little bit more explored. And because at no point did I like dislike the two like main Bill Esolado bad guys, quote unquote, because like they're still trying to kill Mechagodzilla. Like they are like sacrificing people to do it, basically. But I don't know. None of them seemed like super evil. I kind of wish they were a little more Machiavellian, you know. But yeah, in a film that promises both Mothra and Mechagodzilla, it's a crime against humanity. We didn't even get like a flashback of those creatures. So I'm docking a point from when I gave the first movie, giving this a 6 out of 10. And I think I'm giving it the same importance score as a kaiju film as the first movie. You know, once again, this is a direct sequel to that movie, so it hurts it a little bit because if you don't watch the first one, there's no reason to watch this movie. Absolutely no reason. You're going to be very lost. I mean, you're going to be lost even if you watch the first one, and you don't have the Wikipedia open. But yeah, I just don't think this is a very good Godzilla film. Probably, you know, the most skippable, I would say. Like I could maybe even go down to a 4 out of 10, which is disappointing on our kind of importance scale. If you watch the first movie and you don't enjoy it, definitely I would say don't press on. And maybe that'll change with the third film, but I don't think this movie is really strong enough for me to sell anyone on watching the trilogy. You know, it doesn't raise it. So I'll probably stick with 5. What about you, Miles?
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. This is, I mean, none of these are movies I'm going to be suggesting to folks. I don't think it does enough interesting things. Like there are some concepts that could be interesting about it. Yes, but I don't think this successfully delivers them at all. I think it's a low point in the Godzilla franchise for me. Mm-hmm. And which is wild because I was so excited to like rewatch these going in because I remember being kind of positive about them. I don't know what I was smoking back in 2018, but I would love some of that now.
That pre-COVID good.
Right.
Everything was roses. And
we were such sweet summer children then. Yeah. I mean, this is it sucks because on paper, there are some things that like are genuinely interesting to explore. I wish this movie did that. So, yeah, I'm with you to 5. I think this is just a big flat nothing for me.
Okay. Well, that gives you 5 out of 10 for this film.
My lowest Godzilla score.
5.3 technically. And I'm at a 6, which I think will give us a podcast final of a very soft 6 out of 10 for this one as well. So
maybe I should take back my kind score for technical
generosity. Yeah. I don't know. I just it's definitely not elevating the trilogy in any real
way. Not one bit.
But so 6 out of 10 for Godzilla City on the Edge of Battle. I'm giving it a full enjoyment point just for one of the best titles, I think. A very fun title. But that's going to do it for this episode. I'm dreading, honestly, a little bit watching the last of this trilogy. We have Godzilla. No.
I remember it being the Planet Eater. I could be wrong.
Fudge. Hit my head on the microphone. Miles.
So excited.
Where can folks find us if they want to talk about things kaiju online?
If you want to talk to us about kaiju, you can visit our website, kaijuversushistory.com. You can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can join us on Blue Sky at kaijuversushistory. You can rate, review our show, comment, share with your friends, and let us know what you think. You can check out our Letterboxd account to see all our reviews and watch our list of films. And if you really want to talk kaiju with us, you'll go to our sister show's website, cosmiccrit.com, click on the Discord link. There is a Kaiju versus History channel where you can reach us at any time, talk to us in real time, mostly when we're bored at work. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Next week on the podcast. Well, thank you, Miles, and thank you, listeners. We're going to catch you next time when we're back to the United States and giant sea beasts. And we're going to watch a film that's equal parts Jaws and Killer Kaiju. But can Jason Statham's big, bald head be enough to lull us into a false sense of monster movie security to where we're able to enjoy ourselves? Find out along with us next time and tune in for History versus the Meg. Bah, bah, bah.